Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. And, wow, I'll tell you, I have to really love this show because it's challenging for me today. You may know I've been in California for 3 months, and I took a red eye last night and got into New York this morning, and I haven't had a moment's rest, and I'm feeling it. But I'm also feeling the adrenaline because I love this show and I love talking about my favorite subject, food. And I have really wonderful guests that I'm looking forward to hearing about all of her great work. So let's get started and talk about food. My guest is Brenda Sanders, who is a food justice activist in Baltimore City. She's dedicated her life to fighting for vulnerable populations as a community organizer. Brenda has coordinated events like the Vegan Living Program, an annual 6-week vegan education program, Eating for Life, a plant-based cooking workshop, and Vegan Soul Fest, a festival that celebrates culture and the vegan lifestyle. Brenda promotes veganism in her social justice work because it's a lifestyle that addresses health disparities, environmental destruction, and animal abuse, and gives individuals the ability to effect real positive change in the world. Amen to that. And welcome to It's All About Food, Brenda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. First, I want to tell you the picture that you sent me. I'm looking at it right now. It's on my website when I read your bio. And you just have the loveliest energy and glow and joy and happiness. I'm just smiling looking at you right now.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's just coming right out of the photograph, so I can imagine what you're like in person.
Just one big ray of sunshine, Karen.
Exactly. One big ray of sunshine. I like that because that's my dad always called me a big ray of sunshine. So from one ray of sunshine to the other. Welcome, and let's talk about food. Okay, so first I want to thank my friend Adam Weissman. I've known him for a long time. He's a food justice, social justice, big-time activist on so many important issues and works tirelessly for decades, and he recommended that I speak with you. So thanks, Adam, for that.
Thanks, Adam.
Okay, so let's talk about you. I'm just reading all these different programs that you've created and started, and where do we begin? Where would you like to begin?
So I guess it, all of this sort of started, I've actually been vegan since I was a teenager. And so I have been eating that way for years and seen so many, just health benefits and just been really happy with eating that way. And then I started finding out about all the health disparities and the issues in low-income communities in Baltimore that seem to tie directly back to folks' diets. And because I've always been a doer, I just decided that I was going to single-handedly fix this entire problem in Baltimore.
I love that.
So, I know, but looking back now, I can't believe I had the audacity. But, you know, at the time, I was just like, I have to do something. And so I got I went and bought cooking equipment, and I started going and knocking on doors of churches, community centers, just whoever would have me. And I just would do these cooking demos by myself. A few friends would, like, come and help me set up, and I would show people how to cook really good plant-based dishes. And that sort of just grew. It was very slow because I could maybe get a few people into a room at a time, maybe as many as 20. One time I was doing a cooking demo to one person, and I was just as happy doing the cooking demo to that one person as I was doing it, you know, for the 20 people. Because I was just so passionate about this. And then I came across this organization here in Baltimore called Open the Cages Alliance. And it's an animal rights organization that has a focus on social justice. And so they had this program called the Vegan Living Program that they had already been doing. And so I thought, this is really amazing. This is right up my alley. You know, they already have an audience. They already have a program. And so I got involved with the organization. Shortly after that, I stepped up as a director because, it was a great organization with great work. And ever since we started collaborating on the Vegan Living Program, it's just gotten bigger and bigger. I think we had 150 people come through the program this past year. And it's just, nice. It just exploded. People in Baltimore who had never even heard about eating this way were suddenly very excited and wanting to come in and learn, more about the benefits to your health, benefits to the environment, the benefits to the animals. And that just sort of, it took off. And from there, we kind of branched off into some other things. The workshop that I had been doing solo morphed into the Eating for Life workshop, which is now just something that we do as a community outreach activity. Then there are the community gardens, and then, so there's so much stuff going on here around giving folks access not only to the information, but also empowering them to be able to make better choices.
Oh, I love it. I really love it. And you probably have noticed this too, but for me, I've been vegetarian since 15 and vegan since 30. I've been vegan for almost 28 years. And and very immersed in the power of plants. And yet still here in 2016, I'm always so surprised with how many people don't know anything about any of this. And when you just feed them a little seed of information, their eyes open up like, really? I didn't know that. Yep. And there's still so many people out there that need the information and, like you said, need the access. There's so much work to be done. So thank you for believing that you could take on this problem and solve it. Because that's the only way things get done.
Yep.
I mean, when people say, no, it's too big, I can't make a difference, that's just not true. We all make a difference.
Yeah, I've never felt that. I think I may have overestimated at times what I would be able to take on and do, but I've never felt like, you know, I wouldn't be able to make a difference. So
yeah, so when you overestimate, you get a little tired every now and then, right?
Oh. You know a little bit about that, huh?
I sure do. And when we talk about your festival coming up, we'll talk more about that. But I want to know, when you were a teenager, where did you get the resources? Did you figure it out on your own on what to eat, how to eat, and why to eat vegan?
Oh, I had no clue.
Where'd you get the idea?
I was probably raised. Well, I stumbled across the book, and to this day, I cannot even remember what the book was and who the author was or anything. But it was sort of like a coming from the perspective of the body being sacred and honoring the body, and it just, you know, was talking about eating plant foods versus eating animal products and how, you know, you are putting these unhealthy foods into your body versus putting these vibrant plants into, and it just all made sense. And so I just decided right then and there on the spot that I only wanted to put these life-giving, healthy, vital foods into my body. And then at that point I proceeded to eat nothing but canned vegetables because that's the only vegetables we had in the house. And, so not so great, not so healthy. And then, because I was raised very poor, like in the housing projects of Baltimore City. And so I had no idea there was even such a thing as a health food store or anything. And so I was introduced, about 6 months in I was introduced to my first health food store, and I just couldn't believe it, that there were all these foods that I could eat, and it was just so exciting. And it sort of, I mean, I took off from there. I had a really great time, you know, because I went from eating like minute rice and canned string beans and peas every single day to all these fresh vegetables and meat substitutes and this and that and, you know, beans and grains. And it was great. So that was my introduction. Nobody tried to stop me. No, you know, none of my family members tried to stop me from eating this way, but they certainly thought that it was odd. Mm-hmm. And that it would probably just be a phase and I would get over it. So that was 20 years ago. and I'm still haven't gotten over it. So I'm thinking maybe that's not going to happen.
Now, I just want to touch on each of these programs that you've mentioned. So you have collaborated with the Vegan Living Program, which is an annual 6-week vegan education program. Is that like an hour a week, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we bring folks in on a Saturday for 2 hours, and each two-hour session is looking at veganism from a different perspective. So, of course, the first week is, you know, everybody is coming in and there's all this excitement and they're like, you know, they don't know what's going to happen. And we do the most amazing cooking demo that anybody has ever seen. It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a whole variety of vegan foods and they're all delicious and there's samples. And so that kind of gets people, you know, like, that gets them worked up. Like, wow, you know, if this is what the food is like, then I can definitely do this. And so then the second week we go into, nutrition, because everybody wants to know if they're going to keel over and die from protein deficiency or whatever.
Yeah.
Our second session is always the nutrition, with, a certified nutritionist who comes in and talks to our group. The third session I took on because I felt like because I was making the connection all of the connections and not just the health, but also I was, you know, doing environmental work. And so I like really saw the environmental impact of the animal agriculture industry as well as the impact on the lives of the animals who were being used. And so I felt like I was probably the best person to do an ethics lecture because I kind of could pull from my own personal experiences to really talk candidly to our folks about these different connections. And one thing that I left out, we have it set up so that we pair the vegan pledges. Folks come in and pledge to go vegan for the whole program, and then we team them up with sort of a veteran vegan who can sort of coach them and help them out and be their support system. So we all get together every week. The next session after my lecture is either the film Cowspiracy or an animal sanctuary trip. So we kind of have to switch off. Before everybody would go to the animal sanctuary, but then there were just too many of us.
Yeah.
We were disturbing the animals.
Yeah.
So now we have to split up. And so the animal sanctuary trip is always a big, big deal because it's that moment where people finally really make the connection between the food and the actual animal.
And who they've been eating.
Right. So
yeah. What sanctuary do you usually go to?
We go to Poplar Spring Animal Sanctuary in Poolsville, Maryland, and that's about an hour away from Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And they're a vegan sanctuary. They, you know, they have these informational tours to try to, you know, allow people to come in and have that experience and make those connections. So that's always great. And then the last week is graduation. Mm-hmm. And it's always really, really emotional, and we cry, and people get up and talk about their experience. And so it's a really, really a great program. I'm so glad to now be a part of helping to organize it and make it happen. Really honored to be able to get up and speak for an hour and a half and for people to actually care what I have to say. and it's just really, really changing people's lives in Baltimore. So,
yeah, I love it. And And there's just so much, like I said before, there's so much to be done. Now, what I really like is that I think change really is most effective when it's done within the community by people from the community.
Yeah, and that, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the vegan movement is growing. We have more and more vegan celebrities, and we have some major conferences and events that are going on online and in various locations. But I think the most powerful stuff is when it happens locally by people within the community helping the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that one of the mistakes that have been made is when folks from outside of mm-hmm. the community come in and sort of tell people what they should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And it's not
especially from a different culture. You know,
right.
There are so many wonderful different vegan cultures going on. And I think when you get the message from someone like yourself, you're going to be more open to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the vegan education program. And then there's Eating for Life, which is a cooking workshop. Is that just like a day event?
It is. It is. And so we've done it, and we've been asked to come out and do it in churches and community centers, at health fairs. And it's just a really quick, it can be anywhere from an hour to a couple hours. And it just kind of starts with a quick lecture, kind of interactive talk that's then followed up by just a quick cooking demo and food sampling. And then folks have an opportunity to talk to each other. And so it's always a really good time, and it's always so positive. And sometimes people come in and they're very skeptical. They're like, I don't know about this vegan thing.
No,
I don't think this food is going to taste good. You know, it just all seems a little weird. And, you know, through the discussion and, you know, the food and tasting it and, you know, just interacting with each other, folks leave with recipes, and they're really, really motivated to go home and try some of these things on their own. So it's a really good experience for everybody.
So is there a charge for these programs?
Never, ever.
Yeah, that's like such a key thing.
Yeah.
Because I know that a lot of these communities are struggling financially, and so to have to come up with a fee, because there are plenty of programs now, and they're not cheap, so to get mm-hmm. access and have them not have a charge is really a gift.
It is. I see it as life-saving information. So many lives are saved when people go vegan, and so I just don't want to ever charge money for life-saving information.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it's really important that there are organizations and foundations that have started to pay attention to the work that we're doing and want to support what we're
support
doing.
Support it. Yep.
Not... There aren't enough, not yet, but as our work gets out there, as people get to know what we're doing and why we're doing it, more folks are stepping up and saying, hey, you know, what can I do? How can I help? So that's really good.
Okay, so now the next thing is the Vegan Soul Fest. So you're having this third annual event. It's on Saturday. And
it is.
Tell me
coming
about
up so fast.
That.
Whew. Okay, so Vegan Soul Fest has been a surprise for everybody involved. It started out with me and another woman whose name is Naja Wright Brown. She is co-owner of a vegan restaurant in Baltimore called The Land of Kush. And she and I just were sitting down one day and talking about a lot of the issues that plague our community here in Baltimore, and just thinking, what can we do? You know, the Vegan Living Program is great, but, like, what can we do? What can we contribute together? And I don't know which one of us suggested a festival, but, you know, we just kind of looked at each other, and we knew, like, this is it. and she and I are both doers. We're not like sit around and talk about it for 10 years kind of people. So once we had the idea, and I will give her credit for the name, although we fought about this, I would say I came up with Vegan Soul Fest, and she says that she came up with Vegan Soul Fest, but I'm just going to give it to her. She's probably listening, so I'm going to give it to her. She came up with the name. Once we had a name, we took off. Within 4 months, the first Vegan Soul Fest was, you know, was opening up our doors and inviting people in. And we were hoping to bring out a few hundred people because it's like Baltimore City and it's vegan. Yeah. And, you know, like people, you know. We had over 1,200 people come out to the first event. We were bursting out of the seams of this venue that we chose, which we thought we would have plenty of space, but we just did not expect Baltimore to come out the way that they did. And it was just huge. So the first year we grew out of our out of our venue, and so then we through some connections that we were fortunate enough to have, we got to the campus of Baltimore City Community College. And so that was last year, and we were able to add entertainment because we had a bigger audience. We had a bigger space. So the festival is, it's being called a food festival. And that, you know, when we get press and stuff, they, you know, they call it, you know, Baltimore's biggest vegan food festival or Baltimore's newest vegan food festival or whatever. But for me, it's never just been about the food. It's also been about the education. And so I feel like it's really important to book speakers who can speak to the different aspects of just, the vegan lifestyle, eating plant-based. And so, you know, I line up these different speakers like Dr. Milton Mills, who comes out and just talks, you know, speaks as a physician and talks about, the benefits of this lifestyle and, you know, and then other folks, a lot of folks who do work within the holistic community, holistic healing community. We have this year the 300-pound vegan. We were fortunate enough to have him come out and speak to some things, including the racism that's built into the current food system in low-income communities. So that is going to be very exciting. And then as well as the speakers, we also have a lineup of cooking demos that are done by local vegan chefs and caterers. So folks can kind of get all of it. They can get some information. They can, you know, get the hands-on, you know, just kind of learning how to prepare the food, come outside, dance a little bit to the music. You know, it's just an all-around, just feel good. And we have the best vegan food. I mean, the best of the best are coming out and selling food, and I don't get to eat any of it, so that's really sad. But,
why is that? Because you're running around the whole time, right?
Running around. Yeah. There was one year, I think it was the first year, one of the caterers, like, saved me some food, but other than that, I just leave hungry, so... But everybody else is full and happy, so that's all that matters.
I wanted to mention a couple things. One is I love Dr. Milton Mills. I think the first time I met him, he came up to a church in Harlem in New York City, and he was giving a lecture on diabetes, I think, to the congregation. And there was supposed to be a food demo, and whoever was going to do that couldn't make it, and so there was like this frantic search for someone, and I just said, yeah, I'll do it. And so I gave some food demo. I don't remember what I made, but I got to meet him, and we've just been great buddies ever since. I don't get to see him very often, but he's just so good. Just all good and smart and love and wonderful. So I'm glad I had that opportunity. And then the other thing is I totally feel your joy and your pain putting this festival together. From 2002 to 2006, I put on a vegan festival in New York City. And it was before the internet, really, or before Facebook. The internet was around, but it was before Facebook. So it was really before any real free advertising using the internet. And and it was also before, there were just many, many vegan businesses and entrepreneurs, and we're going to get to that in a little bit because I know that you have another business involving that. It was harder back then to get exhibitors. But anyway, it was a beautiful thing, and just so much work. And it's amazing to me how many people love these events, and yet they don't realize what goes into planning them, putting them together, oh, yeah. and then the actual day and all the volunteers that you need. And I imagine you still need volunteers for this event on Saturday?
You know, we got because, again, of Adam Weissman, he really put the word out for us. He was just in all these different groups and saying they need volunteers, they need volunteers. We just really reached our kind of limit on volunteers because we're also offering food vouchers. So, you know, because we don't want our volunteers to starve. So so we got the number of volunteers that we needed, and that was amazing. It's never happened before. Mm-hmm. So that
feed
was
them, and they will come
amazing.
And do anything, right?
I guess so.
That's great, and it's so. I think it's so important that the admission is free, and I can't say that enough. And there's more festivals that are going on nowadays that aren't free, and that just means not everyone can go.
Yeah. Accessibility is really, really important to me. And unless we're doing a fundraiser, and we do have to fundraise sometimes, and then
sure.
you know we'll have like either a sliding scale or just pay whatever you can kind of thing. But otherwise, we really bust our tails and try to get funding so that we can make it a free event.
Yeah. So, how many people are you anticipating this year?
Well, we topped out around 1,200 the first year. Last year, we did about 3,500. This year, because of all of the advertising and all of the buzz around the festival, we're thinking at least 5,000.
Yep.
And there's a part of us that kind of feels, both of us, Naja and me, that kind of feels like we're going to, like, exceed that, but we try not to think about it.
if we
exceeded by too much, we might be in trouble. But we're thinking at least 5.
Yeah, great. Well, I wish you great weather, not too hot. That was one of the things that always got me. My events were always in June, and this was in New York, and it was always really, really hot.
Wow.
But I think it's better than raining.
Oh, yeah. I'll take it however we're raining any day.
Yeah. And hopefully, definitely. You know, we've passed the heat wave, so it'll just be a beautiful day.
That's what I'm shooting for.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about one of your other projects, the Pep Foods Kitchen.
Yeah. Pep Foods. Well, people, usually I have to spell it. You know, P as in Pauline, E-P as in Pauline, because people think we're saying pet food, which makes sense. You know, it makes sense that they would think we're saying pet food, but it's not. It's P-E-P. And this project is we're a collective. We're a producer collective. And the idea kind of came because I was seeing that there was a food access issue in Baltimore. We were doing all this education and outreach, and then people would go back to the neighborhoods where they live, and there would be no vegan food at all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And in some neighborhoods, there is no grocery store. There's only corner stores, convenience stores, and carryouts. And so it, you know, folks were saying, this is great. This is great information, and I appreciate you, you know, making it available to us, but this food is not in our community. And so I knew so many different vegan caterers and so many different people who had these businesses. I thought, what if we all got together and we created a line of vegan foods that are affordable to anybody? And so I started sharing this idea with other people. Some folks were like, I don't think so. but enough people were able to kind of see that vision and got on board. And so Pep Foods was born. We got a kitchen, and we were very excited about this kitchen because it was very cheap. And we thought, you know, you can't beat this. It's two floors. There's a kitchen downstairs, and there's an apartment upstairs, and it's, you know, really, really cheap. And so we thought, this is it. And then we realized, once we had signed the contract, that there's a reason why this kitchen was so cheap. There was just so much work that we didn't even realize needed to be done. And so we started a campaign to try to raise money to renovate the kitchen. We just finished up the last of the renovations. There's just a few cosmetic things that we have to do. And then, you know, get the equipment in and get started. And so we're really excited because we've been renting space from other places in order to just produce, the limited amount of product that we're able to produce for the folks who absolutely have to have it. So we developed a line of, non-dairy cheeses, which people in Baltimore are very excited about. We already have them in a few locations that exclusively use our cheeses as their vegan cheese product. And then we also developed a line of seitan, different seitan flavors as well to act as a meat substitute, because we wanted to go into these low-income communities in Baltimore and just provide alternatives to these animal products that folks can afford. And so if you're eating Velveeta or Kraft or whatever because you can afford it, then we wanted to make sure the pet food cheeses were just as affordable, if not cheaper. And it wasn't easy, but we were able to finally do it. And so our products are, you know, comparable in price to, you know, the dairy cheese products and the meat products. And so, you know, folks are pretty excited. A lot of people want to order products, and I'm really trying to kind of hold out until we have our kitchen up and running, because I don't want it to be a situation where we're paying out in kitchen rentals as much as we're bringing in sales. It just seems kind of silly to me to amp up production to the point where we are just spending a lot of money on these kitchen rentals, because it's not cheap to rent a kitchen. And so folks are really, you know, have been waiting. They have definitely been waiting. But I think that by, you know, early fall, we should be ready to really start getting our products out in Baltimore City. So it's pretty exciting.
So you're making products to sell to restaurants and prepared food makers to sell to the community?
Right. So our ultimate goal is to get these products into the corner stores, into the carryouts as, you know, non-meat alternative, non-dairy alternative. And so we've had a lot of success in getting interest from folks who kind of already know what vegan is. They already have some folks who come in and ask for vegan things. That hasn't been a hard sell. The hard thing has been just raising awareness in the communities that don't have any real food about the products. And so that's where the Eating for Life workshops really come in, because we can go in, we can do the demonstration, you know, have folks taste the food and then say, well, you can get these products at, you know, so-and-so carryout or so-and-so corner store. So we're still kind of in the process of getting the word out in all of the communities in Baltimore about our products. Some communities are already just, they know about it and are really excited already.
Now, I'm kind of fascinated about this. So I'm thinking about disruptive technology. There are a number of big companies, you've heard of them, that are making popular foods that traditionally used animals as an ingredient and are now using plant ingredients to make the same end product. So we have Hampton Creek Foods, and they're making mayonnaise and cookie dough and all kinds of products that use eggs, and they're not using eggs anymore. And then there's a number of meat, plant meat companies. They're making meat from plant ingredients, not animals. And we're all kind of slowly adjusting to this, and I think it's a great thing. But these companies have tremendous investment behind them, and they want to go big. And, you know, I guess there's some value to that. But I love this idea of what you're doing, because you're doing something simple, similar, only you're doing it on a small scale to serve your community at an affordable price and educate them at the same time. And I bet your food is probably healthier than what some of these larger companies are making.
Yeah. All of the folks who are doing the food justice work with Prep Foods are very much interested in producing healthy food as well. And so, you know, because we're all really passionate about health. And so it's really been quite an ordeal trying to find products that we could get at a good price point that also weren't just chemicals, you know, just awful chemicals. And that's what the bigger corporations are doing. They buy these really, really cheap chemical ingredients, and they put that in sort of as filler and preservatives, and then they're able to have a really good shelf life and just high production because their product is far cheaper than some of the healthier products. We just try to stay as true to what we believe as possible, and so we don't have any non-food products in our food, and we plan to keep it that way.
Yeah, I like that, and I really hope that you're successful with this model, and perhaps other communities can adapt it once you've reached us a functional, stable point where things are moving and flowing and working nicely.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
It's going to happen.
It would have been great. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I love optimistic people.
I'm a believer.
Awesome. It would be great if one of those multi-millionaire investors were to stumble across Prep Foods, like they stumbled across Kenton Creek or whoever.
Yeah, well,
that would be awesome.
It's part of our capitalistic society, and it has to change, because I don't think capitalism works in the form that it's in today. I think it needs to be paired with a real positive social aspect where you're making money, but you're doing only good things for society. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Absolutely.
And so I would like to see some of these philanthropists and these investors think about the societal benefit and not just the tremendous return on investment.
Mm.
That's what I'm putting out to the universe.
Awesome.
Now, I want to talk, the last thing I want to cover is the community garden. So I'm reading on your Prep Foods website that you've adopted 5 vacant lots. What's happening with community gardens?
Yeah, so not a lot happened the first season. The first season, we just had a hard time raising, getting funding to even do anything. Last season was the second season, and we did a bit more. We were able to reach out and engage with the young folks in the community, which was amazing. We didn't even expect that. We were trying to reach out to the adults who were not terribly interested. They were kind of like, we don't really know who you are and like what your agenda is, because, you know, a lot of folks, because there is money in poor people, you know, in the nonprofit sector, there is definitely money in solving poor people's problems.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
So I think, you know, over time, you know, folks have come in and said, oh, we're going to solve your problems this way, and then it didn't work, and then they just kind of left, and then that whole cycle happens over and over again. And so by the time we came in, it was like, yeah, so what are you, you know, what's your thing? and we completely understood. But it was the young people who were coming out and were very curious and then very excited about taking part in the gardening. And so we have, on our Facebook page, I don't know if you, found that or if you saw that, but it's called the Penn North Community Garden, PENN-North. And that is a very extremely, economically depressed, very marginalized neighborhood in Baltimore. And, I mean, I think half of the row houses in Penn North are probably boarded up and condemned. Mm. And folks are just, you know, beaten down just from, you know, just trying to survive. And so the children were really, really enthusiastic. They came out every day. They would be standing there waiting for us because we would say, okay, we're going to come out at 4 every day. At 4 o'clock, if we weren't there, if we were pulling up at 4:03, they were like, what took you so long?
Oh,
you
know? Yeah.
And they would just – and what ended up happening, which was magical, is as we started putting the plants in to this vacant lot – first, we had to clear it because, you know, a lot of times these vacant lots become dump sites. So we had to clear the lot. I got tetanus. That was fun. And then, but I made it. Still here. And so once we started putting in the plants and the bushes and everything, animals started to come to the garden, which was something that they weren't really seeing. I mean, they would see rats, you know, because it was, you know, there were a lot of dump sites in the neighborhoods. And so they were used to seeing alley cats and rats, and that's about it. And so suddenly they were seeing bumblebees and butterflies and praying mantises and, you know, caterpillars and all these animals that they had never seen before. And it was magical. They were so excited. Just the sight of a worm, you know, made them very excited.
We call some of them beneficial insects. And with agriculture, with giant agribusiness, unfortunately, we've kind of fallen out of balance with nature and forgotten that everybody has their function, right down to the bugs, the bees.
Yep.
And they will come
absolutely.
If you give them a space that they know is safe.
Yep.
Yeah,
and that's
I love
exactly
that.
What happened. There were colorful birds that the children, you know, were really excited about going and identifying, you know, and figuring out what kind of bird is that, you know, and so it was just a really great experience. And so we've gotten revved up again this year, and so we're having a lot of fun with building up the raised beds and everything. So it's just a really, and now some of the adults are starting to come by, you know, the ones who were a little standoffish before, they're coming by and kind of watching or even sometimes offering to help. So that's really cool as well.
Wow. I'm so glad I got to hear what you're working on and what you're doing in this crazy world where mainstream media likes to tend to focus on all the horrible violence and awful things going on in the world. There are beautiful, good things going on, and each one of us can make some of that happen. And all you have to do is believe and just be a doer, like Brenda Sanders.
Yeah. Aww.
Yeah. Thank you for being you. I'm just so thrilled to talk to you today and so glad you're doing what you're doing. And have a wonderful Vegan Soul Fest. And keep changing
now,
the world
you
like
sure
you're
you
doing.
Are you sure you can't make it down for Vegan Soul Fest on Saturday?
You know what? Maybe. You know, as I mentioned, I've been in California for 3 months. We weren't expecting to stay that long. We just got home this morning. I haven't been to sleep.
Wow.
but maybe.
Well, you got a couple of days to sleep.
I know, because I would really love to see Milton and everybody else that's there and meet you. So who knows?
Well, it's an open invitation. I would love to meet you. Yeah. And we'll put a goodie bag aside just in case.
Oh, I love goodie bags. Okay, so everybody, anybody that's near the Baltimore area, you want to check out Vegan Soul Fest, the website is...
VeganSoulFest.com.
What is it?
VeganSoulFest.com.
VeganSoulFest.com. I'm looking at it right now. Get ready for the third annual Vegan Soul Fest, Saturday, August 20th, from noon till 7 p.m., Baltimore City Community College. Awesome. Thank you, Brenda. Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. Now get back to work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Be well. Take care. Woo. Don't you love awesome people like that? I do. Wow. That just like gets me all fired up. And even though I'm exhausted right now because I really need some sleep, I'm just thinking about all the things that I want to do and do more of because we can. And it feels good to serve. I'm telling you, it does. I mean, it's nice every now and then to spoil yourself and be served. I know. But to do good for the world and see everybody get excited about it, oh, that's what it's all about. I believe it. Okay, so we just have a few minutes, and I wanted to kind of summarize my traveling adventure for the last 3 months in Northern California, tie that all in with all the wonderful things about plant foods. So the first thing I want to talk about is bananas. We rediscovered the Staff of Life Market in Santa Cruz. I think it is my ultimate favorite grocery store. The food is so fresh there, and it lasts such a long time because the farms are right there, and they get picked and delivered to the store. The prices are incredible. Unfortunately, you can't afford real estate in Santa Cruz, but if you can... find a place to pitch a tent or an RV or something, you can take advantage of the Staff of Life because the food prices are great and the food's great. So I was there and I picked up some red bananas. Have you ever had red bananas? I've had them a few times. I see them in the stores a little more frequently. And I purchased them maybe the first few days of August, maybe around August 3rd. They were really hard. And I knew that they wouldn't be ripe until they felt a little soft inside. And a week went by, and they were still hard. And I wanted to eat them because I didn't buy any other bananas, and I like to have my bananas. And I opened one up, and you never want to eat these red bananas when they're not ripe because they're dry and hard and chalky tasting and very unpleasant. So I just forgot about them for a while. It took about 2 weeks, and then they ripened, and they were just really lovely. And the flesh inside, it has like a pink hue to it, and it tastes like a banana, but it has a fruitier, maybe like a berry flavor, a note or a highlight. And it's just, I love variety. And I love trying new things. But the thing about the red banana is we may be seeing more red bananas, and we need to learn when they're ripe and when they're best to eat, because the Cavendish banana, I've been hearing this now for a decade or two, but those in the know about bananas keep telling us that we're not going to have the Cavendish banana forever. Because it's believed that the Panama disease, a fungus, also known as banana wilt, is going to wipe them out. And before the very popular yellow Cavendish that we all see in the stores today, even more popular was a banana called the Gros Michel. Gros Michel, c'est français. Gros Michel, G-R-O-S. Michel, M-I-C-H-E-L, which means Big Mike, Big Michael. And it was a yellow banana that was very popular. And then gosh, about 60, 70 years ago, it was wiped out, practically wiped out by this Panama disease. And for a long time, the Cavendish seemed to be resistant, but now it's seeming the Panama disease has kind of morphed as these funguses and viruses do, and looks like it's going to take over the Cavendish. There's lots of varieties of bananas out there. You just have to discover them. And that's why the red banana is more interesting to me these days. Now, like I said, I've been hearing for decades that the Cavendish is going to disappear. It hasn't disappeared yet, so maybe there's hope. But I love bananas. I love them. And then, my partner Gary DeMattei and I, we did a reading last week, August 9th, which is why I didn't do a program, of a new play that Gary's written. He's been working on it for about 5 years, and we did our first reading, and it was spectacular. I loved the fact that the small audience that came to hear it, they listened to the over 2-hour program, they laughed, and they got it, and it was wonderful. And actually, it was about food, but that wasn't the point of the story. But there was a lot of discussion of food in the play. But one of our friends who came, instead of giving us flowers, which traditionally when you do a theater project, people who come reward people with flowers, and it's lovely to get flowers. Some of our friends, they brought a box of vegetables because they know that we're crazy vegans who love our vegetables. But it was really a delightful gift, and it came with a big head of kale and peppers and tomatoes and radishes. There was a mango in there and some fresh mint, and it was such a thoughtful gift. It came in a lovely basket, and it had those tricolor carrots, the yellow, purple, and orange carrots. What a lovely gift. So we ended up making a number of things. One is we were really craving our mint tea that we like to make at home, but we didn't have any mint tea. And I suppose we could have bought some, but I was really limiting all the different things that we were going to buy. And when we got the fresh mint, there was an opportunity to make mint tea, which we did a number of evenings. And then we made this wonderful gumbo with red lentils and all of these vegetables, the peppers, the tomatoes, the carrots. It was just really, really lovely. So, yeah, there's just a thought for you if you're thinking about an unusual but lovely gift to bring people who love vegetables, a basket of really stunning fruits and vegetables. It'd be really nice. I would love it anytime you want to buy me a gift. Okay. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is how exciting it is. I'm still thrilled when I see vegan options in places where I don't expect them. So we went to the movies a few times, and the alternative baking company had their cookies at the movie theater. So we bought a cookie, and I loved it. It was the Explosive Espresso Chip cookie, and we went to see the Jason Bourne movie, so I thought an explosive cookie would pair very well with the movie. But I wanted to make a note. This is a really delicious cookie, but it's important that this cookie be shared. The package, if you read it, says that there are two servings. It's one cookie. It's about 3.5 inches, 4 inches in diameter, maybe. It's a big cookie. But there's 460 calories in that big cookie. So if you share it, that's 230 calories, 7 grams of fat in each serving, or 14 grams of fat in the entire cookie. It's a delicious cookie, but it is a big, big treat. And best shared. So if you see those cookies out and about, I highly recommend them, but I also recommend breaking them up and sharing them with people because they are a very rich treat. And I just have, 3 minutes left. We discovered Blue Line Pizza. It's a restaurant in California. It is not vegan, but they are very vegan friendly. And I want to say that it was the best vegan pizza I have ever had. So they offer a thin crust and a Chicago style crust. The thin crust is vegan. The Chicago thick crust is not. They also make gluten-free crust, which is by Udi's. I think that's the name they use, that brand, which is also not vegan. But their thin crust is vegan and fabulous. And they also offer Daya cheese. I know some people call it Daya, but I've been told it's pronounced Daya, like dairy, Daya. And so Gary got half. We ordered a large pie. Gary got his half with the Daya cheese because I don't really like it too much. And I got my half with mushrooms because he doesn't like them. And it had sun-dried tomatoes and roasted garlic and spinach and olives. And it was incredible. So that was our once-a-year day with pizza because we don't have pizza very often. But I know people love pizza. So if you're ever out in Northern California, you might check out Blue Line Pizza because they are awesome. Well, there you go. I've talked my way out of another program. So thanks for joining me, and I really hope you will check out Brenda Sanders. You can go to responsibilityandliving.com and check on the radio page for her. I've included a number of links. She's just so inspiring, and if you can get to the Veg Soul Fest this weekend, I highly recommend it. It really should be fun and informative. Thanks for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You can find me at info@realmeals.org. Remember, have a delicious week. We'll be right back.